Support for OPB comes from our members and from our sponsors, like Tracy Ray from the employment law firm of Baron Liebman. Tracy says that OPB sponsorship is a great way to support the community and connect with Baron Liebman's clients.
It's OPB Politics Now for Friday, February 9th. There's a concerning trend playing out within the Portland Police Bureau. There are certain police officers who use force at a higher rate than their coworkers, year after year. Police leaders are aware of the pattern, the Department of Justice is involved, and yet, little has changed. We're going to take a deeper look at the use of force at the Portland Police Bureau. Welcome to the podcast. I'm OPB Politics reporter Lauren Dake.
I'm Portland City Government reporter Alex Zielinski.
Alex, tell us about your story in broad strokes. What did you examine and what did you learn?
Yeah, so I dug into data shared by the Portland Police Bureau on officer use of force, like you mentioned. For some background, whenever a police officer uses force, which can be anything from roughly handcuffing someone to shooting someone, they have to file a report where they describe the force used and explain why they felt they had to use it. So I looked at all these reports for the past 5 years or so, and what I found is that year after year, the same few officers are using force against members of the public far more frequently than their peers. This is all low-level force, like forceful handcuffing or pushing a suspect to the ground who may be trying to run away from a scene. So this handful of officers are reporting using force up to 20 times a year, which, the average Portland officer is using force maybe about 2 times per year. So it's a pretty big disparity. And another interesting thing I found was that all of these officers were pretty new to the force, most hired within the past 5 or 6 years. And all of them are really up to date on required training, which I think goes against some maybe stereotypical conclusions people might jump to when they hear this trend, that maybe it's just older officers who aren't up to date on their training.
One of the officers you write about is Portland Police Officer Nicholas Wombold, who really illustrates the data that you're trying to get across.
Right. And I zeroed in on him because he's one of those officers who uses force most frequently and has done so in the past few years. I explained one example of him using low-level force in the summer of 2022. Wombold responded to a call outside a bar in southeast Portland of a man who had been threatening people and even hit someone in the face. And when Wombold and other officers showed up, it seemed like the man was under the influence of drugs and was acting a little erratic. When Wombold tried to handcuff him, the guy rolled around kind of in a ball and pulled his arms away. So Wombold said he had to straddle him on the ground to get the handcuffs on. After that, the man refused to walk to the patrol car, so Wombold and a few other officers had to pick him up and carry him over. It took them 3 tries to get him into the car. So for anyone observing, this seems like a pretty unobjectionable response to a person who had allegedly assaulted someone. And it could feel like there wasn't really any other way to get this guy into a police car. But this is all characterized as force. In all, Wombold had to file 4 force reports after this arrest, 1 for the rough handcuffing and 3 for the attempts to physically move the man into a car. What's interesting about Officer Wombold, though, is that he embodies this trend that policing experts and, you know, police managers themselves are a little worried about. So Wombold used force at a far higher rate than his peers for years without any real intervention from his supervisors. All low-level stuff, like I just explained. But in 2023, he was involved in a situation where he ended up using deadly force and fatally shot someone. This is true for several officers who used lower force at a rate higher than their peers. A number of them went on to actually use deadly force.
Perhaps the most notorious case of an officer using deadly force in recent years was Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who had a long history of using non-deadly force before he killed George Floyd. You talked to policing experts who said that this pattern can be stopped, that death is not inevitable.
Yeah. You know, the agreed upon solution to this is something called an early intervention system. It's essentially software that police have that track any and all data related to officers over time, which includes, you know, tracking how often they report using force to complaints that have been sent in about them from the public to really any other trends. And the goal is for officers' supervisors to keep an eye on this data and any red flags. Here's how Joanna Schwartz, a UCLA law professor who focuses on policing, put it.
The guiding principle behind an early intervention system is that you identify a problem officer or potential problem officer before they do something much worse.
Yeah, so the thinking is managers can pull officers aside and figure out why they might be using force more than their peers early on and stop it.
So low-level force may be a predictor for deadly force, but you talked to experts who also said there are other reasons why some officers are using more force more often than their counterparts.
Right. There can be a lot of reasons that lead to an officer using force more frequently than others. For instance, maybe the officer works at a certain part of town that sees much higher arrests than others, so they're just out, you know, interacting with folks more frequently. Or maybe they're assigned to a specific unit that uses more force, like a SWAT team or a group otherwise focused on just more violent offenders. So, for many situations, they kind of just say it's part of the job. But if none of those factors apply, which is partially the case in Portland, there are other factors managers must consider when trying to figure out why their officer may be using force more often. I spoke to Seth Stoughton, a criminology professor at the University of South Carolina and a former police officer. Here's what questions he said police supervisors should be asking.
Are these officers being more aggressive than they should be? Are these officers talking to people badly, such that they are provoking people to resist, right? Are they just treating people really rudely and people are responding to that, and then the officer is using force based on that response? Are the officers using bad tactics where they're putting themselves into dangerous situations and then having to use force to address the danger of those situations?
So there's a lot to evaluate to truly understand what could be causing officers to over-rely on force with the public, and then also to know how to address it. Often that can be training on de-escalation, which is, you know, that's training for officers on how to kind of analyze a scenario where someone might be acting erratic or aggressive and react in a way that might calm the scene down, maybe through body language or their tone of voice.
What did Portland Police Bureau officials tell you when you reached out to them about this story?
So I'd really hoped to speak with the police chief, Bob Day, about this trend, since he used to oversee the Bureau's training division. But the Bureau's media department wouldn't set that up. Instead, I got a few explanations from those media spokespeople. Basically, they stood behind these officers' use of force and said they were sure there was a reason for them to use force more frequently. They said that some of these officers were assigned to patrol downtown Portland, where they may interact with more people acting out due to substance abuse or mental health issues, which requires force. In general, they didn't seem too bothered by this pattern.
And I know you did not, you know, dig into this data on a whim. The Portland Police Bureau has had a real issue with officers who use force.
Yeah, you know, I was first clued into this trend during a federal court hearing. You may remember that Portland is under a settlement agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice for claims that Portland police have a pattern of using a disproportionate amount of force against people with a mental illness. That settlement process, which is now a decade long, is overseen by a group of policing experts who advise the city on how to meet the requirements of that settlement. And this group has frequently raised concerns about how infrequently police supervisors engage with officers who may be using force too often to kind of intervene, like I said before. You know, in court, they've said that if this pattern doesn't change, it could only mean Portland will stay involved in this court battle a little bit longer.
After your deep dive on this issue, Alex, what are some of your big takeaways from the story?
You know, it seems pretty clear to me that the city can solve a few problems by taking a closer look at its officers who use force more often than others. For one, you know, it could advance this very drawn-out federal settlement process, which I think everyone would love to see happen. And for another, it could potentially help steer officers off a path that could end in them using deadly force, which I think is also a pretty uncontroversial goal. A bigger takeaway for me as a journalist is that I'd love to see more transparency from the police bureau in terms of allowing leadership to speak to the press. You know, same goes for the mayor's office. In the story, the mayor, who oversees the police bureau, declined to speak with me about this issue. And I think the public would benefit from hearing from their leaders on serious issues like this.
Alex, thank you for your reporting, and thank you for joining me. This week's episode was produced by Andrew Thien. Our audio engineer is Stephen Cray. Our music comes from Audio Network. We'll be back next week with more political news from across the Pacific Northwest. Until then, you can find all of OPB's reporting at opb.org.
I'm OPB Politics reporter Lauren Dake. OPB Politics Now helps you stay on top of important political news. But we know sometimes you just want to hear a good story. OPB's Relative Fiction podcast is a 6-episode series following author and illustrator Nicole Georges as she uncovers family secrets in an attempt to reconnect with her dad. It's a roller coaster of secrets, lies, and uncomfortable truths. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.